Good afternoon. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. There are three orders of business on today's agenda. Representative McFarland, Representative Simon, and Representative Fabian all have bills before us regarding the capital portion, the operating capital portion of school funding. I do not believe we have a quorum yet. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So we will not move the bills or adopt the minutes yet, but Representative McFarland, the chair will move House File 346 for possible inclusion in a later bill. Welcome to the committee, and please identify any testifiers in the bill before us.
Yes, I'm Representative Carol McFarland, and I'm here to introduce House File 346. House File 346 continues the $51 per pupil transfer of operating capital that was approved by the legislature for the fiscal years of 2008 through 2010. The amount of the transfer by any school district must not exceed the product of 1% of the current year's formula allowance times the district's adjusted marginal cost per pupil units for the second preceding fiscal year. And this can only be transferred after the school board has adopted a written resolution stating the amount of the transfer and declaring that the school district's operating capital needs are being met. I have with me Kim Reescraft, and she would like to testify.
Welcome to the committee, and I apologize. I left my glasses at home today, so if I'm squinting at you, it's not because I'm confused. It's just because I can't see what's going on. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Hey, Mr. Chair. My name is Kim Reescraft, and I'm Assistant Superintendent for Independent School District 279 Osu Area Schools. Osu Area Schools is the fifth largest school district in the state of Minnesota. We serve over 21,000 students. 45% of our students are students of color, 36% live in poverty, and 23% speak a language other than English at home. And today I'm here to speak in support of this bill to permanently allow school districts the option to transfer $51 per pupil from operating capital to the general fund. That $51 is equivalent to about 1% of the $5,124 basic formula allowance. This action would have no impact on the state budget as it does not create any additional cost to the state, and the change would allow school boards more latitude to make decisions locally in dealing with these current difficult economic times. We've had this ability for the last 3 years, and in tight economic times, this has given school boards the option of deciding whether they want to fund purchases that are in that list of 24 that are allowable under the operating capital statute, or to use just a small portion to meet the programming and services needs of the school district. As with any business, the school district faces annual cost increases outside of wage enhancements, for example, in insurance, benefits, transportation, utilities, and fuel, and these increases alone are over 1%. So when we face those increases in these times, it's resulted in the need to reduce programs and services for our students. And our district had to do that in 2009. We reduced staff. We closed two schools and repurposed four others. And then in 2010, when we did have this ability to transfer operating capital, our school board took advantage of it because we had sold one of those buildings we had closed. And as a result, we were able to hire back some of those teachers that we had had to lay off during our budget reductions. And our school board would likely be in a position to use this again for fiscal year 2011 if it was available to us. We think that this allows local school boards to be more strategic in their decision making because they will be able to consider the use of their resources in a more integrated fashion, and that bill would allow school districts to deploy a portion of their operating capital funds in difficult economic times while continuing to ensure that the capital needs of school districts are met, and it will not have an impact on the state budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McFarland, did you have any additional testifiers?
Not today, thank you.
Thank you. All right, members of the committee, any questions for Representative McFarland or her testifier? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative McFarland. Why don't we just, if you're going to make this permanent, why don't we just decrease the amount that's limited purchase or limited purposes of the operating capital bucket by the 151 so that then you know, they don't have to go through the process, et cetera, that it just goes into the regular operating fund.
Representative McFarland, or does that expire?
I will. Do you want to do that, or
I think. Mr. Chair, every school district might not be in the position to be have the reserve available to be able to transfer that $51. We always are looking to balance our investments, and so we believe that creates a situation which we really look carefully at what our operating capital needs are, make sure those are met, and then if there's reserve to do the transfer. So that's why we were interested in having it remain part of the general operating capital, but have the flexibility to transfer just a small portion to the general fund if our capital needs were met.
Representative Bond, looking. Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Kwan asked the first part of my question, so we have a start on this discussion. But so since we've had this opportunity the last few years on a temporary basis, and a number of the arguments you're raising relate to difficult economic times, why not simply say we'll have it for the next 2 or 4 years? Why put it in place permanently? And I'll ask a follow-up after you answer that.
Mr. Chair, I will defer.
Mr. Chair, we ask for it permanent, just again, as I said, so that school boards have that flexibility on an ongoing basis so those decisions can be made locally.
Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, that exactly is my follow-up then. Why 1% then, if you're arguing for local school board control here over capital reserves?
Representative Breiner took my question.
Mr. Chair, we think that, you know, this has been successful over the last 3 years. And is your question, why not more? Is that the question?
Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, yeah, is the 1% somewhat arbitrary given your logic? That's not simply an issue of hard economic times.
Oh,
Ms. Riesgraf.
Mr. Chair, we were looking at the costs that we see as increasing, which I mentioned, you know, when we looked at our major cost drivers, that increase is about 1%. And so that's why we thought it made sense with the 1%.
Any other questions, Representative Brenner?
Maybe just a comment, Mr. Chair. I'm still a little bit puzzled. It seems maybe we're just using this as a bit of a slush fund to cover those extra costs, and the rationale for it to be coming out of capital reserves in a permanent manner is still a little bit puzzling to me. That's all I'll say at this point.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have had it, I think, the last 3 years, I think, is what has been available, I think. And maybe somebody already mentioned this. I did not hear it. How many school districts have taken benefit in the last 3 years, the opportunity to do this in the last 3 years?
Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom, do you happen to, off the top of your head, know the exact number of school districts who have leveraged this fund?
Mr. Chair, members, no, we don't have current information for that. We do have for the first year of the 3 years, and I believe it was about 50 districts in 2008 that took advantage of that. We don't have current information from the fiscal year 10 transfers, though.
Sure. Representative Ward?
Well, okay, so 50 out of the 334 that we have, or 330-something that we have. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Madam Superintendent, could you tell us then, you know, why not 330 did not take advantage of this opportunity?
Ms. Riesgraf?
I heard the previous comment to Representative Breinert, but can you tell us why?
Mr. Chair, we were able to take advantage of it only in one of those 3 years. And part of it was because we were able to sell a building that we had closed, so that created that reserve. So we were able to take advantage of it. I would suspect, you know, for other school districts, it depends on local circumstances. For us, out of the 3 years, we were able to take advantage of it, one of those 3 years.
Representative Ward?
Thank you.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm just left kind of wondering how long it will be the more we continue down this path before we eliminate this altogether, put it in the general fund. And then a couple years after that, districts will come and ask us for money for operating capital. And so I just, I lament that we have to be having this kind of a discussion, because a lot of us believe in local control, and we don't like to micromanage, but yet we have these extra funds because we always worry that the school board members, like many of us used to be, will put it into the classroom and let the buildings go up in smoke with not being maintained. My question, Mr. Chair, is for our fiscal staff, Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom, to ask how many other states have this kind of a reserve, and are there any other arguments besides the one of maintaining buildings and not giving them the short shrift over the classroom for having these funds?
Mr. Crow, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I'm not sure what we could get you a count of other states or not. Minnesota's kind of unique in that we adopted early on the uniform system of accounting called UFARS, and that's been in place since the 70s. So Minnesota has very good financial data on its school district accounting. Our operating capital account is kind of a funny deal. That prior to the mid-1990s, capital money for facilities repair was kept in a separate account, a separate fund, a capital fund. And so when that was rolled into the general fund, that created kind of a unique situation where we have a capital component as an account within our general fund. That's not a real usual way for an accounting system to have a component like that. We could do some checking to see what other states do, but in general, Minnesota is more regulatory regarding its funds and its fund structure than most other states.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we have a quorum now, so the meeting will officially be called to order. The chair will move House File 346 for possible inclusion. And actually, I did that already, didn't I? Sorry. Okay, any other questions for members of the committee? Well, seeing none, the chair renews his motion to have House File 346 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you very much for your testimony and for being here, Representative McFarland. We miss you.
I miss being here.
Okay, we'll see you later. Next is the gentleman from St. Louis Park, Representative Simon, House File 71. And now the chair will move House File 71 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And members, we've heard from Representative McFarland sort of the El Papa Grande of how to approach the operating capital portion, and now we're going to come down to, I guess I don't know how to say the small daddy in Spanish, but we'll take that up. So, Representative Simon, welcome to the committee. It's good to see you, and explain House File 71.
Mr. Chair, I've been called a lot worse.
Yes.
But thank you. And thanks for the hearing, and thank you for being the number two author on the bill. I do appreciate it. Members, for those of you who were here last year, you may remember that this bill was heard. It had bipartisan support and no opposition in the House, bipartisan support and no opposition that I'm aware of in the Senate, and it was part of the omnibus bill last year, only for a lot of reasons we didn't take up that bill on the last day of session, and so it was not finally acted on. This is a bill that would just add a 25th factor or 25th item to the list of uses for operating capital revenue, and many of you in this room and many of us in the legislature obviously represent areas with declining enrollment. In two districts that I represent in recent years, we've had in each district to close one elementary school. That's a wrenching decision for any community, as it was for ours. And I was approached a couple years ago, or maybe it was last year, by one of the school boards saying, you know, it costs money, as all of you know. You're the experts, not me. You're on this committee. But it costs quite a bit of money, depending on the circumstance, just to close a school. The shipping, the packing, the moving, things like that. And they asked me to explore the possibility of a bill like this, which would add that 25th category, so that in the event that a school is closed, some of that money can be booked under operating capital revenue. That's the bill. Mr. Chair, I have no other testifiers. As I said, there was a consensus on this bill last year. I'm at your mercy. You are all the subject matter experts here, and I'm happy to answer any questions or defer them as the case may be.
Well, thank you, Representative Simon, for the concise testimony. Any questions from members of the committee? Representative Loon. And before I call on you, it's good to see that Representative Bills he's late, but he brought in treats for his bill presentation. So it's all, in this committee, we let people eat. So if you want to pass those around, Representative Bills, or if you have any comments before you disperse the treats, we're happy to take those at this time.
If you're intending those for another committee, it's over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Every day as I teach high school, I do deal with children who are traumatized by bullies and people who haze individuals.
And I would, you should not say those things about Representative Dabney. That is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will pass them around.
Thanks. Representative Loon.
Thank you. Representative Simon, I'm just wondering, is there any, I noticed that the bill is, you know, just describes, you know, direct costs associated with closing a school and facility. I mean, is that basically just limited to storage and that? I mean, I would imagine districts are really not in the business of, you know, using that for other purposes, not, but I'm just wondering how tightly that circle is drawn around what would be allowable.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bloom, that's an excellent question, one that I asked myself and asked those with whom I helped to draft the bill here. And we made the decision that was probably as close as we could come. When you look at some of the other items in the list of the 24 existing right now, there's some room for subjectivity as well. And our reasoning was, and again, I defer to all of you on the committee who have to deal with these day in and day out, our reasoning was that probably comes as close as we can to putting some guardrails in place and not having it just used as a slush fund, essentially, that it's that word direct puts some sort of guardrail in there. But if you or others have ideas about how to narrow that circle or narrow that scope, I'm totally open to that.
Representative Loon?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Simon. Yeah, I don't know if I have any particular, you know, wisdom or other ideas on how to draw that, but just your intent is that this would just be to cover sort of the, what I'll say, the physical costs of moving equipment and books and supplies and things like that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, that's correct.
Right, thank you.
Any other questions for Representative Simon? Oh, Representative Dietrich. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Simon. I think this is a good bill. I think that this is a bill that helps us deal with some of the current economic conditions that we're facing in our school districts and allows for some flexibility. The question that I have, and I think this is probably for Mr. Strom, is many of our schools, as we close them, and in our district we've closed six buildings, and then we need to repurpose some of those buildings for other needs. Could this money be used for that purpose also then?
Mr. Chair,
yep, Mr. Strom.
Representative Dietrich, I think one of the issues is often when a school district closes a building, they may have bonds outstanding on that building, and the treatment of the proceeds if they were to sell a closed building is different if there are bonds outstanding or not. In terms of Representative Simon's specific provisions in his bill, the costs essentially would allow a district that's essentially got closing costs with that facility, not so much costs associated with selling it, but you know, with mothballing the items and that kind of thing, would allow that to come out of the operating capital account and would not change the treatment of the proceeds of a sale of that building.
Representative Dieter?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Strom. I guess when I talk about repurposing it, I don't necessarily mean repurpose it to sell. I'm repurposing it for another need within the school district or the community. For example, changing it to an early childhood center, you need to put in smaller sinks and that type of thing.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, those particular activities would already be covered under the use of operating capital, the acquire or construct building for school uses, or the improve and repair school sites would allow all of those kinds of activities currently.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Mr. Bills, do you have any other further questions up there? Perfect. And then the chair has moved House File 71 and recommend that be laid over and for possible inclusion for a bill later on. Thank you, Representative Simon.
Thank you, members.
Excuse me, one moment, Representative Simon. Representative Quam?
Mr. Chair, this is more towards the chair. My concern is that if this again gets put into an omnibus bill that faces veto, I would like this to actually be considered for a standalone so that, you know, it could make it through.
I'm sure the chair will take that under advisement.
Representative Quam. One other point of information. Before I consume the less nutritionist part of this treat, are we exempted from the new nutritional guidelines?
Thank you, Representative Quam. I'll leave that to the chair. Thank you, Representative Simon. Representative Ward.
Representative Quam, you and I have never followed nutritional guidelines in our lives. I just want to be clear on that.
Now we have Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian, committee. The chair will move your bill for to lay that over and for possible inclusion for a later bill.
I'd like to say a special thank you to Representative Peterson. He told me he was up late last night really scouring through this bill, and he saw the two words that were changing in the bill. If you turn to page 2, line 225, simply adding the words or lease. This idea came from one of the superintendents that I represent up in District 1A, and they simply want to create some more flexibility within their budgets to be able to, in this case, lease school buses. The cost of a school bus is approximately $85,000. Well, in light of our current economic situation, particularly small school districts, this Badger, for example, they have about 30 kids, 40 kids per grade. They don't have the cash flow to go out and buy the buses the way that many districts can. So the superintendent of schools asked me if we could simply provide them with the opportunity to at least investigate leasing school vehicles. And if they choose to do it, fine. If they choose not to do it, that's fine as well. So it's just creating some flexibility. Questions?
Mr. Thank you, Chair? Representative Fabian. Any questions for members of the committee? Representative Loon, then Breinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fabian. Just a question, when thinking about lease terms, is that just for the district to lease a bus and then operate it with its own drivers and that, or would this encompass maybe contracting out with a private bus service? Or
no, that's not
Representative
the
Fabian.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, that is not the intention of the bill. This is simply for school vehicles. Superintendent of school says we lease computers, we lease other pieces of equipment. Why can't we lease a school bus as well? Thank you.
Representative Loon.
Thank you.
Representative Breiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Representative Loon asked the first part of my question. So my next question is to Mr. Strom, and that's how do districts currently pay for contracting for transportation services? What fund?
Before we do that, I just procedurally, the chair renews his motion to lay over Simon Bill, House File 71, for possible inclusion in a later bill. And then, in addition, I would move that House File 301 be laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill as well. Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair, Representative Breinert, again, this dates back to another change in the 90s. During the middle 90s, the state eliminated the setup it had for transportation funding, which was a series of cost-based categorical formulas. And those essentially were tracked and kept in a separate fund, and the formulas made adjustments for those districts that ran their own fleets versus those that leased. In 1997, the legislature ran the transportation fund into the general fund, and essentially they took most of that categorical funding and put it on the formula allowance, and then they created a small category of revenue called transportation sparsity revenue. So school districts essentially are using their operating fund money to pay for transportation services. One last detail about this. Under the old scheme, when we had a separate transportation fund, we also had something called a bus purchase levy. And that levy, essentially what school districts that ran their own fleets would do is they would put the cost of the depreciation on the buses into that fund, and then when it was time to buy a new school bus, they would use the cost of the depreciation plus any additional amount they would make through a bus purchase levy, and that's how they funded the purchase of new buses. But that was eliminated back basically in 1997, and so since that time, it's up to a district to use its general fund money to do that.
Representative Brainerd. That's it. Any other questions? Any other questions for members of the committee? Seeing none, the chair renews his motion to have House File 301 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. And do we adopt the minutes yet? Representative Mariani has reviewed the minutes from February 10th and finds them in order. Any discussion, additions, or changes? Seeing none, all is in favor of adoption of the February 10th amendments. February 10th minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Is there anything else for members of the committee? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in the interest of constantly being of a mind of trying to help and encourage our new members, I would like to congratulate Representative Bills on a fine choice of treats, a sort of post-presentation of his first bill, but nonetheless appreciated. And since he's a teacher, I also say that in my grading scale, he would get an A, but a little extra credit would have been involved for milk and or coffee to accompany. So just... trying to offer some constructive comments as well. Thank you.
And Representative Bills, some people will never be happy. Republican members up in my office at 5:37 at 1 o'clock. Any other questions for members of the committee? Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If anybody would like to help me by finishing up the cookies, I would appreciate it. Because otherwise I'll eat them all.
Okay. All right, so with nothing else, Republican members, my office, 5:37, this committee is adjourned.